open to all that you have to say through your word, and that we may learn from all you have and give to us. Amen. So, God and politics. I'm going to do this quite a lot in this sermon, so you'll enjoy the joke and get sick of it by the end. Next slide, please. The trouble with talking to a audience where everybody's on Zoom is you can't laugh at my jokes, which is a real struggle for me. So, I wonder how you respond to the quotes on this slide. I have to minimize all the happy faces because I can't see them. So, we don't do God. That's Alistair Campbell, Tony Blair's spin doctor, and from an archbishop in Brazil in the 60s. When I give food to the poor, they call me a saint. When I ask why the poor have no food, they call me a communist. And then Tim Keller, who is an American pastor and writer, Christians should be involved in politics and government as they are in all other realms of life. And then just to wind you up, Donald Trump, I will be the greatest representative of the Christians they've ever had in a long time. I wonder how you respond. There are people talking about faith and politics in recent years. Are you angry? Are you indifferent? Are you resigned? Are you thinking, yes, but... I'm sure you've all heard that old British saying, haven't you, that there are three things you should never talk about in polite society: politics, sex, and religion. Well, I have the task of talking about two of them, politics and religion, in case you were wondering. And don't worry, this won't be a party political broadcast or a political debate. I love a good political debate. But we can do that then, the SWCD Arms, which is meeting tomorrow night, if you're up for that. What this will be, I pray, as we continue in the story of Joseph, is a look at how God and politics might intersect. So back to that story, the story we've been telling through our sermon series, Joseph, the interpreter of dreams for Pharaoh's cupbearer and baker from last week, is still in prison. In fact, 2 years have gone past and he's been languishing in jail. But now the dream problem has gone right to the top, as Pharaoh, absolute ruler of Egypt, is having trouble nights. Okay, if you're anything like me, you can't get past this part of the story without a certain song from a certain Lloyd Webber musical going endlessly through your head. So let's get that out into the open. Next slide, Anna. Hope that's better now. Let's just have that musical, let's deal with it, and let's not do our Elvis Presley impersonations, and let's move on. But, you know, light-hearted stuff apart, these dreams were serious stuff. The dreams in Old Testament times were seen as important ways for the divine to communicate with the human. And if the ruler of the country was having dreams, who after all in Egyptian culture was seen as almost divine himself, then there must be something serious going on, a serious message being portrayed. This was far more important than the latest Downing Street briefing. This was a full-on God, full lifetime briefing with vivid images. Instead of the next slide, please. No wonder Pharaoh was disturbed. And no wonder, as the passage tells us, he called all his magicians and wise men together to see if they could interpret his dreams. But they couldn't. The dreams themselves and what they meant and what happened next is probably more a subject for next week's sermon. I have checked that with next week's preacher, don't worry. But let's remember Joseph and bring him back into the story. Just as a cupbearer, the later they remembered Joseph, as these dreams were not interpreted. He was fetched, Joseph, from his confinement and placed before the king as the interpreter of dreams. The interpreter of a dream that no one else could interpret. No pressure then. Here he was, dragged, blinking out of jail. I love the detail in verse 14 that Joseph was cleaned up before he met Pharaoh, presumably so he didn't offend the royal eyes and the royal nostrils. 2 years in prison, he wouldn't be in his best cleanliness or place. It brings that story alive. And there he stood and was asked for an answer. This was the same Pharaoh who'd had the royal baker 2 years ago impaled for displeasing him. And now it was Joseph's turn to face the music. Sorry about that pun, but you have got the slide in front of you. So as the song goes, Joseph, why don't you tell me what my dream means? But the Lloyd Webber musical misses out a fascinating but important detail. Have you noticed it in verse 16? Because Joseph says no. When he's asked to interpret the dreams, he says no. No doubt terrified and in fear of his very life, he is nonetheless brave enough to be honest with the king, ascribing his interpretive gift to God, who alone will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. Joseph remembers, even in this time of extremists, from whom his gift comes, and even in this time of maximum stress, proclaims his faith and his prime loyalty. So Joseph, or rather God through Joseph, goes on to interpret his dreams. Pharaoh goes on to accept that interpretation. And if you want to know what happens next, we'll see you next week. What has all this got to do with God and politics? Remember those quotes from the beginning. Lots of interesting responses going on in our heads, I'm sure. But can I suggest that possibly if we react negatively, they come down to two basic challenges, two speaking into two contrasting and actually seemingly contradictory views where we say God really shouldn't be involved in politics. Let's look at those two possible views with the next slide. So two possibilities. Firstly, God should have nothing to do with politics. And secondly, politics should have nothing to do with God. God should have nothing to do with politics, or politics should have nothing to do with God. And I want to just spend a little time unpacking these with reference to the passages we've heard today and actually end with a very different view. But I can quite understand why a whole thought of a sermon on politics, and I can't see the screens as to how many people have already left the building, may fill some with dread. After all, Brexit, dodgy PPE contracts, daily briefings, etc., etc. Surely we get enough of this in the news. Surely we don't have to have all this in church as well. Joseph may have felt something very similar. Prison, even for a number of years, for him at least, for the moment, was safe and far away from the risks and pressures of a dangerous political world. He'd had his fingers burnt big time, hadn't he, trying to rise up in Potiphar's house, and things had gone horribly wrong. Wouldn't it be easier just to keep his head down, do his time in prison, and let others worry about royal dreams and stuff? Couldn't he have just said to Pharaoh, sorry, don't know, I'm just a foreigner and a slave. Ask the clever people from your court. They get paid for this stuff, after all. You can see the attraction of that. But Joseph doesn't do that. Not only does he share God's interpretation of the dreams, but if you read on beyond our passage today, offers Pharaoh political and economic advice, which Pharaoh takes. If Joseph and Jesus in our gospel reading was prepared not to shy away and yet operate in the political world, perhaps we, as Christian people, should be prepared to do so as well. Yet perhaps let's reflect before we get there on these two widely shared views, and we've all heard them, and possibly we share them in some shapes or forms, either held by Christians or said about Christians. To quote our Professor Chris Whitty, next slide, please. So what about God should have nothing to do with politics? It's often said, isn't it, in frustration by those irritated either by our archbishops or ordinary Christians daring to bring God into a political debate. And you can see their point, because sometimes, if we're honest, mention of God is misused or words are misquoted to support a particular political point or particular political agenda. But Joseph in verse 16 makes it clear to the king that God was intimately concerned with the political and economic future of Egypt. Those dreams were sent for a purpose. and those dreams allowed that particular political future and economic future to be revealed and interpreted. Jesus, in our gospel reading, without being tricked into saying what he did not mean, and the whole intention behind that conversation was to trick him into saying something that would get him in trouble, whichever way he said, either with the Jews or the Roman authorities, he still managed to remind his hearers about their fiscal and their political responsibilities as subjects of the ruling authorities. If politics is concerned with all areas of our lives, as this picture illustrates, climate change, war, poverty, or even local planning applications, God is concerned with the politics that seek to deal with those issues. Yes, carefully, yes, reflectively, and yes, graciously, Christians can and should rightly remind the political world of God's priorities and heart for the people and planet that he created and loves. God should have nothing to do with politics. God has everything to do with politics. God is deeply concerned, not with politics, but what lies behind those politics, the people and planet that he loves and created. Next slide, and prepare for your political hackles to rise here. Politics should have nothing to do with God. Remember Alistair Campbell on our first slide, Tony Blair's spin doctor, who, quote, we saw, we don't do God. But many do. And here are three well-known politicians deliberately chosen from different political parties with different political philosophies who have made their Christian faith very public in recent years. Tim Farron from the Liberal Democrats, Jacob Rees-Mogg from the Conservatives, Tony Blair, former Labour leader. If you're into politics at all, I suspect at least one of these faces will cause your political hackles to go up a little bit. How on earth can they call themselves a Christian and vote for that policy, or support that thing, or say that, or this? And I suspect the glory and the variety of the church family gathered even here is if we were to do a straw poll, you'd all completely disagree about which person your hackles were rising about. We would disagree, wouldn't we? And that is the complexity and the joy of being family together. Yet each one can and do try to live out their faith in the political arena. As Christians, as us, however imperfectly, they're seeking to, as Joseph did, to reflect their faith out in their politics. And for each of these high-profile Christians that we may recognise, there are thousands more, equally seeking to apply their Christian faith as they serve us in the public arena, either nationally, regionally, or even locally, including some from our church family who serve as local and parish councillors. Please pray for them. This is tough. How do you live your faith in difficult and complex decisions with lots of conflicting demands and agendas going on? I don't know how many of you have watched on YouTube the famous Hanforth Council chaos as they try to hold a Zoom meeting. Politics is messy and can be brutal, but we can live our Christian faith through it. So please pray for them as they put God, or seek to put God, in the centre of their politics and at the heart of their decision making. Now, Joseph may have been literally dragged into the political arena, blinking and reeling from his 2 years imprisonment. But as we shall see in future weeks, in obedience to God, it was a place where he was able to be a major force for good, to literally save thousands of lives, and to be a witness to a whole nation, and even to his troublesome family. But what about us? I want to end just with a short video. This is produced by an organisation called Christians in Politics. Use it as a time to reflect. Use it as a time to pray, whether for others involved in politics or for us.
For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. All things means all of creation. God's desire is for every sphere of culture to be transformed. Business, media, education, arts, religion, family, and even politics. But most of our energy, time, and resources as the church seem to be invested only in the religious sphere. We're training people to be better worship leaders, better preachers, and better small group leaders. But not so much of our time is spent training people to be better teachers, better journalists, or politicians. In fact, we may only be impacting 1/7 of culture. These spheres are transformed by the presence of prayerful, trained up believers within them. For too long, as Christians, we've been shouting from the sidelines rather than getting on the pitch. It's easy to send an email or a postcard. It's harder to build relationships and work with those we may not necessarily agree with. In politics, decisions are made by those who show up. We have a choice as believers in the UK. Are we going to spend the next few years just commentating and complaining about the state of our country? Or are we going to follow the biblical precedent of people like Joseph, Esther, and Daniel, who served in the midst of regimes that make present-day politics look positively virtuous? Surely it's time for Christians to show up. We can just follow, or we can serve and lead. Your vote could just be the start of you making decisions, not the end. So why don't you join a political party or a campaign, or connect with your local councillors or MP? And above all, pray. Rather than shouting from a distance, you could be whispering from up close. We will see God's will be done and his kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. The question is, will we be part of making it happen? Show up. Jesus did.
So as we reflect on all that we've heard, we're going to sing our next song, which is the hymn, Meekness and Majesty.